Today on the 21st show, we reckon with President Trump's decision to attack three targets in Iran over the weekend. The president says the goal of the attack was to hobble the country's capacity to make nuclear weapons.
Iran, the bully of the Middle East, must now make peace. If they do not, future attacks will be far greater and a lot easier.
We'll have expert analysis and listener reaction from across Illinois. You can join us live today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Bloomington Normal, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As you know by now, the United States over the weekend launched an attack on Iran. Air Force bombers and a U.S. Navy submarine attacked facilities at Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan. President Trump addressed the nation late Saturday night, flanked by Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. In that speech and in media appearances the next day, all four of them made clear America's only motive was to destroy Iran's capacity to make nuclear weapons.
Our objective was the destruction of Iran's nuclear enrichment capacity and a stop to the nuclear threat posed by the world's number one state sponsor of terror.
This mission was not and has not been about regime change.
We don't want to achieve regime change. We want to achieve the end of the Iranian nuclear program.
I don't like the regime, but we're not into the regime change business here. We're into the safety and security of the United States business.
Now, and for the first time, President Donald Trump is hinting at an additional motive. Posting on Truth Social, he wrote, "It's not politically correct to use the term regime change, but if the current Iranian regime is unable to make Iran great again, why wouldn't there be a regime change? MIGA, make Iran great again."
Well, that's confusing. But today we're going to try and seek some clarity and understanding. And today, more than ever, is your chance to share your perspective and ask questions about what's happened. You can join us live at 800-222-9455. We'll also be sharing thoughts from people in our texting group throughout the show, like Anthony in Central Illinois, who says this isn't a partisan matter. If Iran was imminently capable of obtaining nuclear weapons and this prevented them from doing so, it was 100% the right move. On the other hand, Jai in Batavia says, "We had the Iran nuclear deal, forged through diplomacy. Gone are the days of well-thought-out foreign and domestic policy. These next 4 years will be an unmitigated disaster for the United States and the rest of the world." Let us know how you feel about the president's decision at 800-222-9455. What do you think about the possibility of retaliation from Iran? 800-222-9455. And would it be worth the price if Iran's nuclear weapons program is in fact significantly degraded? 800-222-9455 to join us throughout the hour today. That's 800-222-9455. We talked about the possibility of this attack on Friday, and we thought it would be interesting to bring back the same panel now that it's actually happened. So joining me again today is Norma Claire Maruzzi, associate professor at the University of Illinois Chicago, specializing in Iranian studies. Mateo Mohamed Farzana is professor and chair of both the history and political science departments at Northeastern Illinois University. And Nicholas Grossman is political science professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and author of the book Drones and Terror. Welcome to all of you. Let's get right into it. Norma Maruzzi, I'll begin with you. Brief top-line reaction to hearing the news of the attack on Saturday night.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having us back. I think all of us are really sorry that we do have a reason to be here, but here we are. My first reaction, it's like I want to beat my head against the wall. To tell you the truth, I mean, the sense of being aghast at watching the U.S. sleepwalk into another Middle East conflict, the surreal sense of deja vu all over again with Trump proclaiming mission accomplished when everyone, IAEA, et cetera, are saying we don't know the extent of the damage. We can't know for a while. But just too much recollection of George Bush doing this at the beginning of the Iran-Iraq war. And the question of, yes, where is this going? A sense of really sleepwalking by impulse and vanity projects on all sides, and the tragic implications militarily, economically, humanely, in Iran, in the world, in the region, in the world. The only people getting anything out of this are those who are only putting their political impulses first, and I would say that's the leaders of the countries involved. So that's my... Yeah. That's my first reaction.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there, and we will get into some of those aspects you mentioned. Matteo Farzanat, same question to you. Brief top-line reaction when you heard the news Saturday.
Well, just to echo what Norm was saying, the ridiculous thing about all of this is, if this is the question I like to pose, and maybe somebody can answer this. I doubt anybody has an answer for it. If what Trump is saying, that the nuclear capability of Iran is destroyed 100% or 90%, why is the state of Israel still keeping attacking non-nuclear facilities and defense facilities and infrastructure? The news just came around, and I got news from Iran that a large part of Tehran does not have power. They are cut off of electricity. The other thing is the mayhem and chaos that's being basically created on ground zero in cities, hospitals that are in sort of a chaotic situation. We have over 1,000 people killed thus far since last Friday. So the question is, if we have eliminated the nuclear threat, why is the campaign going on? And the other ridiculous thing that Hegseth was saying, Secretary of Defense was saying the other day or today maybe, was that we are not at war. The United States is not at war with Iran. They just want to eliminate the nuclear threat. Then what do we call when you drop bomb on a sovereign country without full permission from the American people vis-a-vis Congress? There is no resolution. There is no active resolution that has been passed. Those would be my two questions, and it's quite shocking as they are. Unfortunately, they shouldn't be, because we're dealing with very unconventional, and I'm using kind of mincing words, of a president that, like Norm was saying, sleepwalking into a disaster.
Nick Grossman, brief reaction from you as well.
I had a few. One was a level of frustration that it's been running for a while, which is that the Iran nuclear issue is a real problem, that it's something where they're in violation of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, that there are many possibilities of security risks to the region, to really anybody. If Iran did get a bomb and they were exploiting this loophole whereby they were getting a lot of the material for a bomb, but not technically building one in the construction, and getting the material is the hard part. So the frustration being that we, meaning the international community, the world, largely had this problem handled, that you had the UN, the US, Europe, Russia, China, all in consensus that Iran should not get nuclear weapons, and all imposing sanctions and working on Iran to get them to the negotiating table. And they did, and it worked. And Iran accepted nuclear restrictions, and they had then much less of the capacity to enrich. And all this was verified and carefully inspected and worked out in extreme detail. And then in 2018, Trump threw that away without cause. And without even accusing, say, the Iranians of cheating on it, and there was widespread consensus they were not. And then people, including me at the time, thought that this was going to lead either to a nuclear-armed Iran or war. And here we are. And as a military solution, a military approach, I am very skeptical that the United States totally destroyed Iran's nuclear program. In fact, I am confident that the president lied when he said that, because it is just not enough time to do a damage assessment. It's not even that he's definitely wrong. It's that he can't know. And by the U.S. telegraphing this for about a week, and Trump teasing it like he was a TV producer talking about upcoming sweep shows, that Iran had reportedly moved a lot of the material out of these facilities, and so their nuclear program program is still intact, and it is certainly weakened, and there are some security arguments for that. But in weakening it, and attacking Iran, and especially with Israel attacking a number of targets beyond the nuclear program in Iran, it is just sending a big signal to Iran that if you don't want to be attacked, you need to get nuclear weapons, and you can't possibly trust the United States, because when you did make a deal, the U.S. reneged on it. And so this isn't over.
Yeah. Well, let me share a couple of more messages from our listeners, because we got some questioning this idea that we even, you know, how we understand that Iran may have a nuclear weapons program. Brandy in Neoga said, have we even received confirmation or evidence that Iran has a nuclear weapons program? I'm worried about my brother, who is an active duty Marine, and I'm worried about attacks on U.S. soil. How many times will the U.S. go to war in the Middle East over WMDs we haven't even confirmed exist? Stephen in Urbana says, the bully is D.C., not Tehran, given there is no proof that Iran has nuclear weapons. What is your basis to relate that Iran does have a nuclear weapons program? I guess he's talking about me in the text message we sent to our listeners. Sounds more like weapons of mass destruction BS that got the U.S. into its last Middle Eastern war. Norma Maruzzi, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I really appreciate the questions of the audience and the thoughtfulness and the concern. I think just to reiterate, right, what we know is that as my colleagues have said, I mean, they have a nuclear program. They've insisted on their right to a nuclear program. All the intelligence, including U.S. intelligence, recent U.S. intelligence, stated that Iran was 3 years away from a bomb, if they decided to go for a bomb. They have materials, they have a program. So that's a possibility, right? And it's a threat. I mean, nuclear weapons are a disaster for the entire world. And what we know from, I mean, a nuclear weapon that goes off anywhere causes radioactive fallout far beyond the area, et cetera. So this is an existential threat to the world, not just Iran's nuclear weapons. What we also have seen is that the U.S., as my colleague Nick mentioned, right, the U.S., Iran was complying with the treaty that was universally supported. Trump pulled it out, and it was fairly clear, as Nick said, that at the time that it wasn't because of Iran's noncompliance. It was pretty much because it was an Obama era deal, and Iran wanted to break with the legacy of the previous president. Now we have he's back in office, and he was supporting negotiations. And the Iranians themselves have said, right, that we were about to go for a further round of negotiations, and Israel bombed. Now, this last week, we were about to go for a round of negotiations with leave to go meet. I mean, in both cases, like a day or two before, leave to meet the EU for negotiations, and Iran bombed. What do you think? I mean, they've asked now, what do you think the implication is that? And what we are really forcing on not just Iran, but other, let's say, problem state actors around the world. If you don't have a bomb, maybe it's in your interest to try to get one, which is a disaster for everyone, the U.S. and everyone else. It is clear that Iran has had a nuclear program. It is also clear from all the reliable intelligence that they were years away from the possibility of attaining a bomb. This is all too much like the Iraqi situation of the flag waving around WMD, weapons of mass destruction, that turned out to be figments of warmongering imaginations. And I think in this case, it's not even warmongering. It's Trump sort of leading from the hip in his own, really almost like a fantasy of military gamesmanship or games, not even gamesmanship. I wish it was gamesmanship. It's worse than that.
I do want to point to, there was a report in The Economist in the last week or so that purported to have, this Israeli intelligence dossier that suggested 6 years ago there was a special progress group formed in Iran that would allow a breakout, and that given Iran's defeat through its proxy groups, Hamas and Hezbollah in Gaza and Lebanon, maybe it was advancing in that way. Matteo Farzanah, what's your perspective on all this question of the sort of, I guess the question is the imminence of, you know, Iran's potential move toward having nuclear weapons?
I think I mentioned that on Friday, if you remember. Even if I don't have any evidence, and I don't know anyone that does, that can point to the fact that Iran was actually after a weapons nuclear weapons program. Even if they were, given the fact that the Americans have proven since 1953 that they cannot be trusted. I don't see how anyone in Iran could imagine that U.S. has made a turn to be a trustworthy partner. Like Nick was mentioning, Americans were the ones that reneged on the promise after years of negotiation, intense negotiation with 5+1. And everything seemed to be in order. But as Norma is also saying, and I'm agreeing with that, that this is something that Trump wanted to do to have under his name and possibility of a breakthrough in relationship with Iran after 40-some-odd years of animosity and maybe a Nobel Peace Prize, which definitely is not happening now.
Nick Grossman, we need to take a break in about a minute, but I wonder if you have a perspective on this, what we've been talking about, you know, the idea that there was imminence here or the way, you know, and I don't know. I was thinking back to the way in the run-up to the Iraq War. For as much criticism as the U.S. got for that, we did go to the United Nations, right? There were media interviews. There was a slow, unveiling of purported evidence. This was quite different in approach.
Right. Not only did they not have evidence, even yesterday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio was pushed in an interview to ask about, what of the intelligence? U.S. intelligence has said that Iran did have an active nuclear program and was enriching uranium up to potentially bomb levels, but did not have an active weapons program. And his response was, forget about intelligence. And that is a ridiculous thing for just a wildly irresponsible thing for a government official to say. And suggest to me that the claims that the Iranian nuclear issue was serious and ongoing, but was more or less as it's been in a similar state for a couple of years, rather than Iran having done an immediate push for a bomb, is likely accurate. And that if the administration had a bunch of evidence indicating or even suggesting in the direction that Iran was now rushing for a bomb, now doing the actual bomb construction, at which point then it's either attack or accept that Iran's going to be a nuclear weapons state in a little while, if they had that, they would likely be presenting it to the public.
All right. We're going to continue this conversation. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. More to come here on The 21st Show.
Support for The 21st Show comes from listeners like you and the Des Moines Arts Center, located in Iowa's capital city. Featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the American attack on Iran. Three nuclear facilities, purportedly, Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan, came from Air Force bombers and a U.S. Navy submarine over the weekend. In addressing the nation on late Saturday night, President Trump said, Iran, the bully of the Middle East, must now make peace. What do you think about this? Let us know at 800-222-9455. Marlene in Urbana sent us a text. Bully calling out the bully, that's rich. Ann in Urbana said he's going to poke the wrong bear and we'll all be in trouble. Vicky in Centralia, Illinois says Trump's poll numbers are down, so we go to war. It's as simple as that. And Jim in Southeastern Illinois texted, and I'm going to abbreviate it a little for time, Jim, but he said, I am somewhat supportive, but I'm also concerned about retaliation. My own view is that Iran cannot be trusted until they have a regime that respects Israel's right to exist and that respects the right of its Arab neighbors to live in peace. Above all, I would not want to see the U.S. occupy Iran. That would surely backfire. I also would not want to see this turn into a wider war. I'm glad that Israel has weakened Iran, but think that they are being too brutal in Gaza, Jim says. Thank you to everyone who is writing in and calling in. 800-222-9455 is the number. My guests for the hour today are Nick Grossman, political science professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, Norma Claire Maruzzi, professor in gender and women's studies, international studies, and political science at the University of Illinois Chicago, also associate editor of the journal Iranian Studies, and Mateo Mohamed Farzaneh, who is professor and chair of history and political science at Northeastern Illinois University. Let's talk about this question of the American motive, which there was a soundbite we played at the top of the show where the president and a number of officials, including Vice President Vance, Secretary of State Rubio, Secretary of Defense Hegseth, all said this is not about regime change. And then President Trump posts on social media, it's not politically correct to use the term regime change, but if the current Iranian regime is unable to make Iran great again, why wouldn't there be regime change? And then he says, MIGA, M-I-G-A, I guess, make Iran great again. Nick Grossman, I'll start with you. What do you make of that? What do you make of American motives here?
So it's that American motives are muddled, uncertain, that there is no real indication from the Trump administration that they have thought this out carefully, that they've worked through a variety of strategic situations and strategic scenarios, and seems to be operating more by impulse. So where originally the Israelis had attacked, and there were some reports that Trump had recommended against it, but then they did it anyway, and then there were reports of him claiming that the U.S. had been more of a part of it, and the New York Times recently had a expose, I think it was just this morning, that one of the motivations that are part of the things that changed Trump's thinking was he saw how Israel's attacks were playing on Fox News and thought that it looked good on television and therefore wanted to be more of part of it.
Just to add to that, that Tucker Carlson, because he's not on Fox anymore, who has actually been a voice against this out there, that maybe he wasn't getting contrary opinions in that same report. Please go ahead. Yeah.
Right, quite possibly. There are forces that have been advocating regime change in Iran for a long time. That I remember when I was in the D.C. area in the 2000s, I heard from multiple people. There was almost to the point of cliche of saying, everybody wants to go to Baghdad. Real men want to go to Everybody wants to go to Baghdad. Real men want to go to Tehran. And so there was a regime change push then within Israel and within the Netanyahu government. There have been advocates for regime change war in Iran from Netanyahu's perspective, since Israel being unable to do it themselves, of getting the United States, getting an American president who would go for it. So there's always been some people pushing that and sometimes advocating a claim that the Iranians will rise up and do this. They will overthrow their government in response and get regime change that way. Except people usually don't blame their own government when they're being bombed by foreigners. They tend to blame the foreigners that are bombing them and perhaps even rally around their government. So while Iran is a brutally repressive theocracy, that it has put down protest movements violently, it is especially repressive to women, and there have been a number of times where people have protested against it, that doesn't mean that they're going to appreciate the United States and Israel bombing different areas in their country, including ones that are killing some Iranian civilians. And so they, while they don't like their government, are unlikely to be able to overthrow it. And the United States and Israel both do not seem to have a plan for either what would happen if the Iranian government collapsed, what then, or what they would do if the Iranian government doesn't collapse, because now that they have damaged but not destroyed its nuclear program, if this government survives, it is likely to push even harder in the future, so that then it would have a deterrent if the U.S. and Israel think about attacking again. And that leaves either regime change or some sort of ongoing festering problem that got worse.
Norma Maruzzi, what do you think about that? And, you know, maybe you can pick up on what Nick was saying about, you know, this in some ways it is a very brutal government in Tehran. We've seen mass protests of women against many of the restrictions on them a few years back, and a pretty brutal crackdown on some of those protests as well. But, you know, what sense do you have of how you know, events like this might be playing out in country?
Thanks. So, you know, as Nick was saying, as I and Mateo, as we all sort of hinted at, but I said explicitly last week, right, you know, exactly, bombing, outside external bombing of a country and especially population centers rallies people around the state, right? So including people highly critical, who have been highly critical of policies, of politics, et cetera, and people who have been working to transform the government, to democratize it, to make it more accountable. I mean, activists, etc. But this is a different situation. And what I'm hearing is including from people who had these kinds of positions, as well as other, you know, fantasies, listening to Iran International, the Saudi-sponsored television program that broadcasts and radio and online, etc., that, yeah, everything would be great if, you know, just to snap your fingers, regime change inside and outside Iran. I mean, that doesn't happen realistically. But what's actually happening is, for instance, people are suddenly appreciating the Basij, which is the local militia, state-sponsored militia, that's active usually on internal crackdowns on any kind of dissent. Often they're resented and hated. Now people are appreciating them because they are feeling like this is protecting them. So this is backfiring in all the ways that we supposedly want, in terms of internal accountability, in terms of support for local self-determination. That clearly isn't what we actually want. The rhetoric, and I would also say that, you know, just sort of quickly, that There's a sort of comfort in believing in conspiracy theories, because the advantage of a conspiracy theory is it seems like a big logical plan with someone in charge. No one is in charge of this right now. If anybody's in charge of this, unfortunately, it might be Benjamin Netanyahu, who seems to have done this precisely because his strategy has always been, when he's politically most vulnerable, to militarily escalate with no regard for civilian consequences, etc. We've seen how he's done this in Gaza. Iran is really scared about this now. I mean, people who used to think, oh, yeah, the Americans will save us. I mean, certainly there are people like that who have been present. It feels really different when you lose electricity, right? It feels really different. And suddenly that fantasy, and I think a lot of the West is still working on a fantasy that this is all a nice contained little surgical thing. We're all, yay, this is going to be easy. The fantasy is not there in Iran. And this is a regime that has survived in the face of immense economic pressure over decades, military isolation, etc., right? They're not going to just keel over. In part because the core elements of the regime know they have no place to go. They don't have some ally they can easily call on retreat to. They can't retire to Switzerland, which is what the Shah did initially, you know, Egypt, whatever. But, you know, this is long haul, and this is deeply scary. It should be scary for Americans. It should be scary for Europe. It should be scary for oil prices. I mean, that seems a petty point to detail, but I think for Americans, right, it's going to hit. It doesn't always hit initially militarily, right? This is not just someone else's problem.
You can join us today at 800-222-9455. And let's go now to the phones, where Paul is calling from Urbana. Paul, thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you for taking me. You sort of already discussed the regime change and the truth social part, but it's clear that they do want regime change. The question is why? And I think it's the Silk Road to a large extent. It's they want to be able to control. They want to have a compliant, you know, dictator. It's not like the Saudi Arabians are very much better in managing their population, and they're our allies. They just want somebody that will, you know, join the U.S. global consensus on how things should be run. And I'm not advocating the Iranian regime, obviously, in this, but I think that's sort of what's at stake for the U.S. Israel has this idea that there's an existential threat. The language of the fatwa is that Israel will be wiped from the pages of history. It doesn't say the people will be wiped out. It doesn't say anything like that. They just it's hard to parse this kind of nuanced argument, but I think it's really the U.S. wanting hegemony, and there's certainly so many examples of that that it's sort of pointing out the obvious, but it doesn't get discussed in that context much. So I appreciate you wrestling with these ideas. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Paul. I appreciate that. Matteo Farzanah, do you want to respond to that, or what else? What we were talking about before?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for the caller and his comments. I sort of agree with parts of what he's saying, that the United States in general would like to have that kind of supremacy everywhere, including in the Middle East. And yes, we like our dictators, we meaning the American government, we like our dictators to be compliant with what we want. And if they so happen to be violent against their women and against freedom of speech and what have you, so be it. That's the cost that we pay. U.S. has historically shown time and again that we make very good friends with dictators if they do what we tell them. But if they don't, and if we cannot control them, basically we would like their regimes to be changed. And I don't see this to be any different.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show, 800-222-9455. If you want to join us today, we're talking with Matteo Mohamed Farzana of Northeastern Illinois University, Norma Claire Maruzzi of University of Illinois Chicago, and Nicholas Grossman of U of I Urbana-Champaign about what happened in Iran over the weekend, the United States attack on three purportedly nuclear weapons sites. Again, 800-222-9455. To join us. Nick Grossman, what does the United States and what, if so, have a strategic interest in preventing Iran from becoming a nuclear power?
Oh, sure. A strong one. That one is the basic cause of nonproliferation, that it is extremely difficult, if not impossible, to get a country that has nuclear weapons to give them up. The only examples are unique ones of South Africa had a couple bombs, and when apartheid fell, then the new government wanted to rejoin the community of nations and gave it up to become a member in good standing. And Ukraine inherited some bombs from the Soviet Union when it collapsed, but ones that they couldn't really maintain and were also then in violation of treaty, and they gave them up, ironically, in exchange for a promise from Russia and others to respect their territorial integrity, which Russia clearly has not done. You can see with countries like, for example, North Korea, that the more these weapons spread, the greater all sorts of risks multiply. Of somebody could miscalculate, there could be an accident, there could be bad information, a rogue actor could steal or sell one, a terrorist could steal or sell one, or even just get the material and then using a dirty bomb and spread radiation everywhere. So there's one as general cause of nonproliferation that is one of the most international causes that there are. Then there's also U.S. Security interests and U.S. allied security interests in that there are sometimes, you know, people and some of the Israelis, for example, say that if Iran gets a bomb, that they will then use it. And the Iranian government has indicated that they understand, like just about everybody else, that nukes are for having, not for using. You use them, you get nuclear weapons back at you. And governments like having a country to run. And the Iranians are no different. Kim Jong-un in North Korea is no different in that regard. But if they do have that, then they have a nuclear deterrent, which can then make a big threat that could deter attacks like the ones we're seeing right now. But also more broadly, that Iran is a disruptive and violent actor in the region. So they have bombed Saudi oil fields. They've supported a variety of militias in Iraq and Syria. They support the Houthis in Yemen, who have done things like cut off water supplies to an entire city of the I supported Assad in Syria, who has, you know, now been overthrown, but even when he used chemical weapons against civilians. And so that, so that is a strong U.S. interest. A number of ways Israel is threatened by a number of Iranian allies and by Iran itself. So there are security interests. And yet that doesn't mean that the actions that Israel and the United States are undertaking are going to be strategically beneficial for security-related goals, that there is potential that they make things worse or that they kill a bunch of people without necessarily making things better. And we will likely navigate an information environment in which there's pressure for a lot of people to not hold both of those ideas in their head at the same time, to oversimplify, to instead of recognizing, well, the Iranian government can be doing a lot of bad things and can be a negative disruptive actor in a variety of ways. And yet also that doesn't mean that this particular military action against them is smart or good or will lead to greater benefits for those goals.
All right, 800-222-9455 to join us on the show today. Let me share a couple of more reactions from listeners. Joe in Urbana says, USA is the world's bully. Preemptive strike is an attack without provocation. We have a POTUS with no plan, just distraction for all his wrong moves. Similarly, Joe and Urbana said, or I should say, excuse me, Christopher and Brimfield said, just another one of his lies. He told everyone that he's going to not start a war. This probably won't end well. On that note, Lloyd in Danville says, first, the president's decision was, in my opinion, political, and Americans are now put in harm's way because of the possibility of retaliation. Iran should be allowed to have nuclear power, but not for weapons. Trump needs more oversight before he makes decisions of this magnitude. You can join us today, 800-222-9455, until the top of the hour, and let us know what you think about America's decision to go to war, or I guess as the president says, not go to war, but just strike three sites in Iran. I think that decision will be up to the Iranians as to what happens next, and we can talk more about that when we return. My guests are Nick Grossman from the U of I, Norma Claire Maruzzi from UIC, and Mateo Muhammad Farzana from Northeastern Illinois University. Again, to join us, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about America's attack on three Iranian nuclear facilities, Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan, over the weekend. Sunday, actually, Iranian local time. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. We're talking about this with Nicholas Grossman from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also the author of the book Drones and Terror. Norma Claire Maruzzi, who is a professor at the University of Illinois Chicago, and Mateo Muhammad Farzana, professor and chair of history and political science at Northeastern Illinois University. Share another text message we got from a listener. Aaron in Springfield said, this will not help us in the long run. Iran may not strike back immediately, but they or one of their proxies will do something to hurt Americans. This strike will only harden their resolve to acquire a nuclear weapon as soon as they can. With Trump's withdrawal from the original nuclear deal in his first term, Biden's failure to renew diplomatic efforts, and now Trump's direct strikes, the U.S. has shown a dangerously short-sighted approach over the past decade that will only further nuclear proliferation and make the world less safe. 800-222-9455 to join us. Let's now go to Bob calling from Springfield. Bob, thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Brian. I am opposed to the U.S. strikes on Iran. I don't think they're going to do us as much good as a lot of some people think. I think that Trump and Netanyahu are both criminals and madmen, and that they are doing these things to distract from their failed leadership and failed policies at home. I don't understand why Iran is being denied the right to have a nuclear bomb. Ever since Ronald Reagan, we've been hearing about mutual assured destruction, or MAD, and so it's okay for Israel to have the bomb, but it's not okay for other Middle Eastern countries to have the bomb. I don't understand that. I don't think it's right. I don't think that I know that Iran has talked about wanting to destroy Israel, but again, with mutual assured destruction, that serves as a deterrent for other countries to attack Iran, or a deterrent to other countries to attack Iran. So I don't think that Iran would attack Israel if they had a nuclear bomb, and I don't think that Israel would and the United States would be attacking Iran if they had a nuclear bomb. So, yes, there are risks. I agree with Nicholas on what he was saying. But I think that the balance of power and mutual assured destruction would actually probably stabilize things rather than destabilize them.
Sure. Bob, thank you so much for calling in, sharing your perspective. I appreciate that. Let's see if we can get one more quick call in. Deanna in Rockford. Deanna, thank you for calling in. Deanna, are you
Hi.
There?
Yes.
Hi. Go ahead, please, briefly. I want to make sure our guests have a chance to respond. Thank you.
The Ayatollah Khomeini funded Hamas for the October 7th tragedy that occurred in Israel. He is the only leader on this planet that applauded that death and destruction. The Ayatollah Khomeini is a very dangerous person, and I'm an independent. I applaud Trump for what he did on Saturday. Khomeini needs to be taken out. Absolutely. He's a danger not only to Israel, but to America and every other nation on this planet.
Deanna, thank you for calling in, sharing your perspective. I appreciate it. Let's give some of our guests a chance to respond to what they've heard. And Norma Maruzzi, I'll start with you.
Hi, thanks. I sympathize with the last caller's perspective, but I would really encourage her as well as others to consider not just emotional wishes, but realistic assessments, right? This is where we are, right? There is, you can, I mean, the same thing, you know, with Trump saying, right, mission, it's sent, he didn't say mission accomplished, that was Bush for Iraq, but saying, you know, targeted, it's, that's done and dusted, right? We've obliterated the problem. What does it mean to take out Khomeini, a world leader? Whatever you think of them, right? Our favorite dictators here and there. I mean, in that sense, I'm speaking ironically. But I think this is not a time for, this is not a situation for Americans as well as everyone to be just fulfilling kind of fantasy desires of revenge, or is to think, what, where are we really getting ourselves, especially for whatever our intentions are? You have a strategy. You want to contain Iran, you want to contain that policy, then how do you do it, not just what you think you want? What we see right now is complete divides across the political spectrum, not just in the U.S., between Democrats and Republicans, with weird bipartisan consensus in, or alliances in unexpected ways. But we're seeing that around the world. We're seeing Merz in Germany supporting the U.S., saying nothing wrong with what Trump did. We're seeing Macron saying this is dangerous. This is, it's interestingly, Iran is sort of a flashpoint, has always been. It's been an independent actor in many ways. One of your previous callers, Paul, I believe it was, mentioned that. That is a problem, a thorn in the U.S.'s side. Not that they're so powerful, but they've been effective, right? That's now decades of being an independent actor, and that's bothered the U.S. It's bothered a lot of people around the world. But it's also meant that they've got experience with this, and the question is, where do we go from here, right? That isn't escalation of disaster. Everybody's hunkering down. Israel is bombing more intensively all around Iran now. There's no indication that they're going to pull back. There's no clear indication right now of what the Iranian government is going to do, except probably crack down on dissent, crack down on its own population, which is also what governments do under wartime situations. What the U.S. does is completely unclear. And as I said, opening up, I mean, it's just sort of, we're in fantasy land. And with Trump sort of saying what comes next into his mind, I mean, I really think he's operating on a sort of theatrical spectacle, is not quite sure what. And but it's also clear that not just he's compromised our ability to negotiate as a serious, taken seriously partner, whether in this or others, but even on the shortened time frame, right? That he was saying what he said, oh, we've got 2 weeks to decide, and then initiated this. We're not after regime change, and now we are or not. It's not clear. No one quite knows how seriously to take any of the statements coming from U.S. government, and that's really a scary problem for everyone.
Let me, we have actually some breaking news as we're going to air live 11:50 Monday morning on June 23rd. An Axios headline, Iran launches missiles at U.S. military bases in Middle East. Quote, the White House and the Department of Defense are aware of and closely monitoring potential threats to Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar. I'm probably saying that wrong, but that is a quote from a senior White House official to Axios. Matteo Farzana, one of the questions I wanted to get to today is, what are the range of possibilities Iran might have for retaliation, especially given the, you know, a lot of its proxy forces, Hamas, Hezbollah, have been sort of weakened in recent years through this ongoing conflict?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry about the breaking news. That's quite worrying. The answer to a question about the proxies, well, Israel has effectively taken out Hezbollah. They have replaced the Syrian regime that was close to the Islamic Republic for years, the Bashar Assad government, successfully, and replaced it with somebody that they can work with, as brutal as Sharaa has been as an IS commander. Aside from that, if there are sleeper cells in the region, which I'm not aware of, that there is a possibility inside Iraq, that there might be some. There's a possibility inside Saudi Arabia as well, in Dahran, because it's a Shia-dominated region where most of the oil fields are. That's a possibility in Bahrain as well, where the Sixth Fleet is, I believe, or maybe that's Qatar. But those are all possibilities. If there are going to be a massive response by the United States, we just have to wait and see what the damages are and whether or not American lives have been put in danger in way of casualties. It would have disastrous consequences for Iran, I think. And I'm just not sure at this moment if they can handle that. What I am definitely worried of is a sort of destabilizing of the government in Iran and chaos that would ensue if the United States would decide to have a massive attack against Iran for what they just did a couple of minutes ago.
Nick Grossman, how are you thinking about that, the possibility of retaliation as we're seeing? A little more I can say. CBS News is quoting the U.S. Embassy in Doha, Qatar, saying, out of an abundance of caution, we recommend American citizens shelter in place until further notice. So there's the question of retaliation, and there's the question of escalation.
Right. So this was one of the things that I worried about in advance and had written about, saying that even if the U.S. thinks that or is trying to do a highly limited strike and then say that's it, that things could still easily escalate because Iran would likely retaliate in some fashion. Otherwise, and this is basic statecraft, but if you get attacked and you do not respond with force in some way, it is effectively communicating, you can attack me whenever you want. I'm not going to do anything. And so usually states think, well, there has to be some price to be paid. So one would be Iran firing on U.S. forces. It looks like they've done already. And they did once in 2020 after the United States killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani. That was in Trump's first term. And that time, we got lucky in that the missile strikes injured a number of U.S. troops but didn't kill any. And then there was a tragedy in Iran where Iranian air defense blew up an Iranian passenger jet. And that then managed to defuse a lot of the situation and make it that the U.S. didn't choose to retaliate. However, even if Trump had thought that this would be able to be a one-off, if there are U.S. troops killed here, or if Iran fires on U.S. forces multiple times, then there will be a lot of pressure to respond in some fashion against Iran for basically the same logic, and these things can really spiral. There's also a possibility, probably Iran's biggest card would be to close the Strait of Hormuz. This is a narrow water choke point at the bottom of the Gulf that is through which about 20% of the world's oil flows. And it's on the coast of Iran. If Iran shoots into it, then commercial ships will not go through it. Insurance companies won't insure that anymore. And that could be very disruptive to the global economy. Iran's parliament had approved that, or at least gave permission for Iran's National Security Council to do that if they wish. And the decision now goes to them. And that's another thing that could get the United States to get more involved, to say, well, if this is going to be disrupting the global economy, we can't allow that. We can't allow the economic damage it'll do to America. So we have to use force more to try to keep it open. And that potentially could get a greater response of force. Also, just briefly on the two callers, I really want to caution people on both targeted assassinations of political leaders and of mutual assured destruction, in that a lot of the accusations against the Ayatollah are true. And there are yet that doesn't necessarily mean that whatever came after would be better, or that if killing him, that then there would be any sort of flowering of positivity from it. There are a lot of bad actors in the world, unfortunately. And one of the examples of this is in the U.S. removing Saddam Hussein. That is one of the big reasons why Iran has been able to spread so much influence in the Middle East. It no longer had Iraq opposing it, and also gave rise to ISIS. So that, and plus we had, you know, many thousands of deaths just in the process to get there. With mutual assured destruction, there, that took a while to settle in. It possibly worked works only at the highest international level. There were a few close calls, a Cuban Missile Crisis a lot of people are familiar with. If you any of you have not heard the term Able Archer, look it up. Wow, that was a close call to the world almost being totally destroyed. So I would be very cautious on the idea that just once somebody gets nukes, that then they can have a settled deterrence relationship. And also, there's a possibility, Soviet Union did some of this, for example, that with nuclear weapons, that then you attack somebody and then you use nuclear weapons as, well, you don't want to escalate this. You can see Putin doing this a lot with the war in Ukraine, of keeping others out of trying to prevent him from doing that. So I would say be more cautious on things like that. And it would be the same logic of being cautious on the U.S. striking Iran directly, because it was always very unlikely to end there, because it's a cliche in military circles, but the other side always gets a say in how any war goes. It never goes how the ideal plans on one side want it to go.
Absolutely. And many generations of American presidents have tried to use air power to exert their will. They find it's often not enough, or certainly not the last chapter. And this is not our last chapter. I'm sure we will talk more about this in the future. Nicholas Grossman from the U of I Urbana, Norma Claire Maruzzi from U of I in Chicago, and Mateo Muhammad Farzana from Northeastern Illinois University. Thank you all so much for sharing your expertise. Thank you to everyone who called and sent text messages. We really appreciate you participating in our statewide forum about these important issues. That's it for us today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.